Welcome to episode 49, the 7-squared episode of the Golf Talk podcast brought to you by thesandtrap.com. This is Eric Barzeski in still snowy Pennsylvania. Jeff Smith is joining me from still rainy Washington, I'm guessing.
Well, up until
the last couple of
days. But it was gorgeous today. Beautiful.
Tiger Woods is in a gorgeous mood, most likely. His foundation, the Tiger Woods Foundation, is replacing the International on the schedule with a July 4th weekend Washington, D.C.-based event. Of course, it's not yet been chosen, but Tiger Woods Charity has been named as the primary charity. Still don't have a name yet. Early speculation is it may be the sponsor here, Earl Woods Memorial Tournament or something like that. Coca-Cola Earl Woods Memorial or something like that. Or maybe with Tiger Woods' name attached, the sponsor won't need to have a title. Sponsor role.
Well, this this kind of answers the big hullabaloo that was going on a couple of weeks ago in the media saying that Washington, D.C. lost a tour event, and what are we going to do now?
Well, this is Booz Allen.
Yeah, this is probably up to
I guarantee you it will not be the Booz Allen Earl Woods Memorial.
No, and I think this is probably going to gain a little more following. Yeah, the Booz Woods.
It will not be the Booz Woods Memorial.
It could be the Booz Daily. But maybe not the Booz Woods.
The Booz Hooters Daily Memorial. Yeah. Remember when John Daly played the tour?
Yeah, right. Good times. Remember the good times.
Shaq Vickers, of course, the international guy in Colorado with the milkshakes, pretty much blamed Tiger Woods or the lack of Tiger Woods appearing at his tournament, too, for the death of the international. And now it's kind of surprising that, poof, taking Shaq Vickers' tournament's place is a tournament that Tiger Woods will most likely be at pretty much every year. Perhaps not this year because it's in July and Elin is due around then. Again, people remember that Tiger may skip the British Open if this kid is due to be born around that time. So he may skip it this year, but I'm guessing he'll probably be there pretty much every year after that, if not this year also. Jack Vickers probably a small right to be upset, you think?
Oh, I think he's probably cursing Tiger Woods. Of course, under his breath, not publicly, never would happen. But he's probably thinking, well, there you go.
He's come close publicly, though. It's tough. He's no love lost there.
Yeah.
But again, Tiger Woods is an independent contractor, and I'm not sure if I were Tiger Woods, I would want to go play in a Stableford format event where your ball goes, 10% farther. I mean, that would just, I think that would just mess you up. And it's the week before the PGA Championship. I think that would just mess me up for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So I never understood why. It's a popular tour event because the pros were treated well there. But I just can't see that as being a good preparation for a major.
No, I don't think it was a good preparation for a major. As I've said in the past, I think.
Was it?
I think that event was unique enough, though, that it had its place on the PGA Tour. And so I, for one, am, kind of sad to see it go. It was kind of obviously you had the extra distance and the different format made it interesting. Interesting for me.
Moving on, though, from that announcement, the USGA made an announcement the day after our podcast last week, so we're a little late in getting to this. They put out a proposal on new groove regulations. Basically, U-grooves, they're not banning U-grooves. A lot of people have kind of gotten that wrong, but they're banning how closely spaced they can be. Basically, they've determined that U-grooves provide an unfair advantage in their language, so to speak, on urethane covered balls in the current configuration, how close they are to each other over the old V-grooves. So you can either go back to V-grooves or go using U-grooves that are spaced a little farther apart so the performance characteristics are more similarly match that of V-grooves. Jack Waddell, of course, on our site is not in favor of this. He thinks it affects 0.5% of the golf population. I would say we're probably looking at it affecting about 5% of the golf population. That 5% being single-digit handicappers who spin the ball when they hit the green. For the rest of the guys using Sirlin, there's no advantage. And even for the guys, with a 12 handicap who's using a urethane-covered ball, he hits the green from 100 yards, 1 in 10 times. So he's not even benefiting much.
Right.
So I do see this as potentially being a good move. And again, it may be a little bit of a test to see if the USGA can kind of retroactively change rules. How do you see this move? Is it a good thing?
I think, as we talked about last week, the ramifications are fairly significant when you think of, if you even add 1 or 2 feet to the closest to the pin on average, that's pretty significant for a tour pro. So that's definitely going to be felt. It'll be interesting in the future for us to kind of follow the stats and see how much that really does affect these players. years. So I don't know. That's my initial take. I'm not so sure I'm ever really in favor of major rollbacks. I'm not sure if you'd even call this a major rollback, though.
For one, I think that we'll see golf courses a little less tricked up with this change. Let's assume this change was in effect right now. Suddenly, I think pins would move a little farther away than the three paces we see them at right now sometimes. They're set three paces away because, you know, you're supposed to fly it to a certain point and suck it back to the pin or something. So I think you can move them a little farther away with this change in place. There'll be a penalty, again, for short-sighting yourself, too. So the pros will be more apt to go a little more at the middle of the green anyway. Short-sight yourself with a very spinny combination of a new wedge and a soft-covered ball, and, you know, you can hit a fly high flop shot that still manages to spin and takes a hop and just sits there right where it lands. Camilo Villegas hit a flop shot in the playoff we'll get to later, the Honda Classic, that really had no business sitting down as quickly as it did, except for the fact that it spun a good bit and the rest of it was his skill in throwing it up so high. So I see it affecting that kind of shot mentality as well as going back to the fairway from a 7-iron on up, maybe. We'll link to a bunch of stories though on this, including one from the Eidolon president, I think I pronounced that correctly. The Eidolon golf people do just wedges, so it'll be interesting to read what he says, and we'll link to a couple other comments from others on that. Of course, Jack Nicklaus thinks it's equivalent to throwing the deck chair off the Titanic. Arnold Palmer comes back with a quote that says, he applauded the proposal and he said, "The fact is, you have to have a little more game to be able to play the V grooves versus the U grooves." Some people have said that going to away from U grooves will hurt Tiger Woods because he's a bomber. But as we saw last year at the British Open and even the PGA Championship, Tiger Woods doesn't need to bomb the ball to win. He can beach up the tee hitting a 3-iron every day and beach it into the greens and so on. So any change that makes the game just a little bit tougher for the pros at the top level will further separate Tiger Woods, is what I think.
Well, and the same thing that's happening to Tiger Woods is happening to everyone else, so they're going to be equally as affected by this. And so I don't know if there's a gap there. I mean, I don't.
The gap that exists though is going to get a little bit bigger, I think. Anything that makes the game tougher. If pros were mandated to play with hickory shafted clubs, I think Tiger Woods would be even better, is what I'm saying.
You think so?
I think so.
You don't think others would adapt to those changes as well?
I don't think they would adapt as well as he would.
Right.
I think it's just athleticism at that point, you know? I could be blowing smoke up someone's butt.
Just playing devil's advocate, that's all.
Yeah, we'll be right back after this message.
To be a great putter, you have to be tension-free.
Trust your line and follow through. For the short wedge shot, set your weight forward and keep it there.
To create spin on a chip, mash the ball into the ground.
I've got to try that.
To hit the bump and run, place the ball back in your stance.
On downhill putts, play more break.
On short putts, focus on a tiny spot in the hole.
Be sure to accelerate.
On long putts, lean the shaft forward out of dress.
When it's this windy, try widening your stance.
And your most important tip, trust your Titleist.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
And welcome back. In the forum topic of the week, we are talking about what might be the best route to the tour. One member of our forum is saying that it's not college. And he's referring, of course, to Hank Haney's article in Golf Digest, where he says he doesn't believe that college is necessarily the way to make a superstar on tour. And so we had a bit of discussion on the forum about that. One of the quotes that he refers to says, "Regardless of what path our athletes take, it's a numbers game. America can't win. Consider the Ryder Cup. The population of Europe is roughly 490 million compared to 300 million in the U.S. and advantage Team Europe." And he says he's just curious what everybody else thinks.
Yeah, I'm not sure that quote really matters. 490 million to 300 million, but how many of the Europeans play golf? Europe consists of countries where you can't play golf much of the year, does it not? I mean, some of those countries are pretty far north and get a lot of snow and have a very short summer season. And of course, European dominance, even in Germany, where their weather is pretty much the same as it is here, European dominance in winter sports is quite high. So they may not have as many golfers. I think that's a silly comparison, just looking at populations of things, you know. I mean, Japan has very few golfers, and yet they have a reasonably competitive tour, and, you know, some of their pros do well on the PGA Tour, so it's tough to say. But as far as a route to the PGA Tour, you know, it's to each his own. I think college has its benefits in that you can certainly learn about life. You can certainly learn about competition. A lot of the college guys will play against their future competition on the PGA Tour. You learn to travel as a college golfer. You learn to work many hours a day on your game. I'm not saying you don't do that in high school if you're that good, but you learn to treat it as a job, and that's important too. For other people, you know, wandering driving around playing mini tours may be the best way. That seems like a quick path to burnout. But, you know, the thing with a college degree is you get it. A, if you get it in sports management or PR or something like that, it can help your career. And B, you can always fall back on that. Not many people that go play mini tours can fall back on much unless their father-in-law owns a business and they can go work in an insurance company or something like that. So
yeah, I think easy money brings up a good point that the Americans haven't really had an answer in the Ryder Cup in recent years. The thing that I believe he's missing.
If college weren't the answer, we wouldn't have all the European college people coming over here to our colleges.
Well, that's exactly the point I was just kicking butt on the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
Yeah, is that it? What he's assuming is that the European players aren't taking the college route, and of course that's not true. Luke Donald, Camilo Villegas, others have taken that route, and they're having success at our own game, so to speak. So they're doing it the same way.
That about says it for us. Of course, you can participate in the forum topic of the week. Check our show notes and click on the thing. And if you're not a member of our forum, sign up and participate all you want. So we'll be right back again after this message.
For a crisper long iron, grip up on it about an inch.
Be real aggressive through impact.
Keep it short and aggressive.
Maintain your balance.
Take one more club and swing it smooth.
Think happy thoughts.
For a soft draw, close your stance and make sure you release the club.
I'm going to line my feet to the right a little bit. Hook the club face, then grip the club.
You can learn a lot from the world's best players.
And one more tip. Trust your tightest.
Oh, that's got to be it, guys. Come on, that's a perfect shot.
And welcome back. Mark Wilson had attended something like 10 straight Q schools, I believe, was what they were quoting. Finally, in the third hole of a four-man playoff, birdies the short par 3 17th at PGA National Golf Club in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, to walk away with his first PGA Tour win. Of course, now he's exempt for 2 years, so he won't be going to Q school in 2007, 2008, or 2009. Well, maybe at the end of 2009. But an interesting finish because there were a lot of players with a chance. Camilo Villegas was at 5 under, stood in the 18th fairway with a wedge in his hand, hit an absolutely horrible shot, realized he was trying to go at the pin, but he could have missed on the left side. Instead, he went to the right, had to hit a great flop shot and make a two-footer to get in at 5 under. Then some people crumbled coming in. One of those crumbling was Boo Weekly, who birdied the 17th in regulation to go to 6 under after bogeying, I think, the hole before. Then 3-putted, including a missed putt from 3 feet 3 inches. It didn't even touch the hole. I mean, it barely deflected, so I mean, maybe it caught a dimple or two, but missed from 3 feet 3 inches after kind of gagging his first one up there way short to get in. In the playoff, Camilo Villegas misses about a 4-footer after hitting a so-so flop shot. Jose Caceres beats it around. Mark Wilson hits it in the water on one hole. They played the 18th first. Hits it in the water. Still manages to par after chunking it out of the mud to stay alive, and then three holes later, made a really nice...
What was it, 30, 40-foot putt?
In regulation to get in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He made a bunch of putts all over. And then birdied from about 10 feet or 12 feet or so on the 17th par 3, the third playoff hole. And Caceres, inside of him, on almost the same line, missed. So walks away with his first PGA Tour win. I was just surprised at the number of people that choked, especially Camilo Villegas. He had 2 or 3 chances. Played a great back nine, but had 2 or 3 chances, both in the playoff and in regulation, and really couldn't pull it out.
Well, all of them were just hitting the ball all over the place. I mean, even Boo Weekly on the first playoff hole, just before the darkness settled in, I mean, he put the ball right in the middle of the fairway, just where he was supposed to, and then he knocks the ball, ends up knocking the ball after a nice layup right in the bunker, you know?
Right.
So you kind of expect these guys to play a little better. Of course, I wouldn't expect the same thing of myself under that kind of pressure. But
put it in the middle of the green and maybe make a putt. Otherwise, you two putt and move on. That's how I saw it. Instead, he had to make a great up and down. You're right, in regulation just to do it. Mark Wilson was hitting it all over the lot at the end of Sunday, hitting everything left. He almost hit the water left of the 18th fairway, which almost nobody else did. And of course, Johnny Miller made a comment about something to the effect of playing the 600, the longest hole in the course, first in the playoff. It was, of course, delayed till Monday morning after they played this 18th hole. He said something to the effect of that it didn't take too many brains to decide that because, you know, tournament was supposed to end at 6, players finished at 6, and then they go out and play a hole, and it takes them a half an hour, and then it's dark. So they only got the one hole played on Sunday and had to finish up this morning with 2 more holes. So, yeah, not too bright. There we have it. Callaway Golf has... Ernie Ellsworth, of course, has been, since leaving TaylorMade many years ago, has been a Titleist guy, has recently been announced that he was let out of his Titleist contract early and has signed with Callaway Golf. So he's joining Phil the Chill or Phil the Thrill, depending on your point of view. Surprising to see Ernie move in the middle of a year, and I mean, most of these moves are usually made in the off season, so players can have time to adjust.
Yeah, kind of, well, that just goes to show that golf is business, and endorsements are business, and so he saw an opportunity here probably to make some money. It is going to be surprising because we found out, we mentioned this last week, the possibility, but he is going to be playing a new ball, the HX Tour 56, and then with a whole bag full of new equipment. Boy, that's going to be quite a transition for him, especially coming off his injuries, and he's kind of had some ups and downs here the last couple of years. Boy, this is going to throw, or could potentially throw, another kink in the works for him.
Mostly been down in the past couple of years, so perhaps not a big loss for Titleist. Ernie's something like 38 or something, which isn't that old, but he's getting up there, and he hasn't won in 2 or 3 years on the PGA Tour, so eh. You know,
He's a popular player, so I mean, anybody's going to appreciate having him. Yeah, anybody's going to appreciate having him in their fold. But yeah, he's definitely had some downs following knee surgery, and I don't know. I wish him well, and hope he can adjust and make some good swings like we like to see him do.
The Masters is embracing technology now that Billy Payne is in, and Hootie Johnson's out. Billy Payne is in charge of the tournament, and. Part of the changes is, again, an extra hour of coverage on the web. The web feature called Masters Extra will be from 3 to 4 p.m. on the first two rounds as USA Network comes on the air, 2:30 to 3:30. It's an extra hour. I don't know that I'll care. I'll be watching in high definition on TV, not a little webcast thing on my screen.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, some folks are going to be sneaking a peek at work, and so productivity will be at an all-time low during that time for golf fans.
Very true, very true. And I believe last year they had a small webcast, especially during the Players' Championship, I believe. And I was able to get a question on and answered on the webcast version. I was quite proud of that moment.
Oh, nice.
I was probably one of about four people to ever send them a question, though. So,
hey, you're famous.
I'm famous.
I guess.
Oh, so the Accenture Match Play Championship, some felt that it was a bit snooze-worthy. Cameron Morfitt, a senior writer for Golf Magazine, has a suggestion. Sex it up, basically.
Sex it up.
Cameron wants to invite the women, including Natalie Goldis, Michelle Wee, and several other female people to contest their own World Match Play Championship at the same time. So he feels, of course, that having the sex appeal, perhaps, of the women competing at the same time may just help in case, you know, the men have kind of a boring final matchup, or, you know, Tiger Woods gets eliminated again in the third round. So, you know, Natalie Goldis, Paula Creamer, some of those could make it through, and it'd be interesting to watch. You know, some of the guys might like to see that. And since women don't watch golf on television, I can kind of see his point. What do you think?
I think if these guys can't make it on their own, that it's probably not worth watching. I mean, heck, you know, we'd all love to see Natalie Goldis stride the fairways, and these girls would add interest to any gentleman who cares to be watching this particular event. But I just tend to think, well, okay, let's not go for goofy little tricks here. Let's allow this tournament to stand on its own and do what we can to continue providing an opportunity for these guys to compete. I mean, that's certainly the
LPGA that would be gaining the most in such a proposal, of course, by tacking on to a PGA Tour event. The PGA Tour has nothing to gain by doing this, I don't think, except a few more viewers. But those viewers are going to be wondering why they're watching more of Henrik Stenson and less of Natalie Goldis than they'd like, perhaps, as well. So,
it's a cheap trick to me. I don't think that it's worth it. You know, if you want to have a silly season event that's something like that, then let's have those. Right.
And they have the Big Break 7, which started last week or something, and I think starts actually eliminating people here soon. You're going to watch this year?
Yeah, I'll be watching as much as possible.
So they just brought back everyone that people talked about the most is pretty much what happened. I mean, they didn't bring back the best golfers and the most deserving people. They brought back everyone that was talked about the most.
Everybody's happy to have Don back.
Don Donatello. I'm happy to have him back because I get to bust out Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle graphic we did. You remember that?
I sure do.
That was a good one. So we get to bust that out. And we talk about this more if the Golf Channel website weren't such a screwy resource hog with lots of flash and way too long load times. But instead, we'll just say, yeah, there's a bunch of screwy people on there that were chosen for the amount of people that disliked them, including Nikki DeSanto and Don Donatello and so on. So good luck to them, or not them. Good luck to the other people. That about does it for episode 49 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you again by thesandtrap.com. Check us out online at thesandtrap.com. Of course, if you'd like to send us an email or a voice attachment, read it or play it on our show if it's appropriate, and you can do that to just send it to one of us. We'll get it. Again, that about does it for episode 49 of the Golf Talk Podcast. This is Eric Brzeski and Jeff Smith saying, hasta la vista.
Hasta la pasta.
Baby.